Well, joining me to have a look at the day's trade now is Nesan Nayar from Sasfin Securities. Thanks so much, Nesan, for your time today. I mean, we're struggling to hear Jonathan completely there, but certainly what has given sentiment a boost is the economic data that filtered through today in the form of GDP numbers. Working to fuel somewhat of a buying frenzy in the market, whether it be in the fixed income space, on the equities front, banks and general retail stocks jumping to records today. What are you making of the momentum that's been triggered?
Listen, I mean, you know, you mentioned the risk on trade is back, slightly weaker dollar. You know, one extrapolates from that Trump's proposed trade war is more than likely not going to take place, and certainly not in the format that he's presented it, because he's getting a lot of pushback now, even within the GOP. So I think that makes emerging markets look a little bit better. The GDP data, 1.3% for last year, I remember all of us thought it was going to end up sub 1%, and you know, so 30% outperformance on the GDP number, fourth quarter growth above 3%, very strong. And I think the impulse that we're going to see now from the positive sentiment, you know, we have a new president, a new government in place, big shakeup at the SOEs, as you mentioned. I think giving lots of people confidence that, you know, it's perhaps time that they started spending money now.
It's consecutive performances, though, that make a trend. So as we wait for that to filter through, like I say, we've had the banks getting swept up, and First Rand out with half-year numbers today, showing just how difficult the half-year period was, but certainly cautiously optimistic about the road ahead.
Yeah, you know, it was, you know, First Rand's, you know, amongst the big four, probably the best quality operator out there. You saw it in these numbers. You know, you compare it to Nedbank's numbers and Absa's numbers. You know, top line grew a little bit better in a tough operating environment. You know, above inflation at 6%. Cost growth through coming in at 9%, though, largely because of additional impairments that they've decided to take on. Probably the right time in the cycle, you know, to put a little bit away in the kitty. But I think they're positioned now, and I think what people are looking at is, you know, in the next 12, 24 months, you know, as corporate South Africa starts investing in the country again, you know, banks will be an immediate beneficiary of that.
Yeah, and I was chatting to CEO Johan Berger a little earlier today, and he was pretty emphatic about the fact that South Africa is their jewel in their crown right now. 80% of revenue still to come from South Africa, with 10% from rest of Africa, and the other 10% from international operations, of course, with UK operations coming into its stable at this stage. Let's look at the retail category, Cashbuild. We're not used to seeing negative numbers out of a company like this, but higher operating costs and sluggish consumer spending finally taking its toll.
Yeah, you know, they did an acquisition, I think, a year or two ago, P&L Hardware. And if you took that acquisition out of the numbers, they would have been even worse. So I think it's an indication of how difficult it is. You know, Cashbuild work operates in the lower LSM environment. You know how difficult the low LSMs are finding it to find disposable incomes to do home improvements and things. You know, it's not something that's new. You know, we've seen it amongst the lower end credit retailers as well. It's been a very tough environment generally. You know, for the middle to low South African consumer. And, you know, you may listen to stories anecdotally about, you know, how difficult people are finding it. But when you look at the results of the likes of Cashbuild, you really see hard evidence of the strain the economy took throughout 2017.
Because, of course, what it's reflective of goes just beyond, you know, consumer and household spend. It's a reflective of an entire small sector, in a small business enterprise sector, and the fact that we could well see that part of the economy ticking slower.
Yeah, I mean, the VAT increases as well is going to have an impact on them. One benefit, though, is that the currency has strengthened quite substantially. So, you know, the imported cost of goods are actually going to be sub-inflationary, certainly for this year, if the rand holds. And, you know, there doesn't need to be substantially higher selling price inflation for Cashbuild, you know, to start growing earnings again. I'll certainly be looking very closely at their numbers as a general indication, you know, of how the middle to lower LSMs are doing.
Clover, in the meantime, first half diluted headline earnings per share rising 19%. Launch of other products like olive oil and soya has propelled its revenue growth. And, you know, it's said before that it's looking to diversify its revenue earnings, especially after the restructuring the company has seen. Your impressions of Clover at the moment?
Very difficult to disseminate those results because, remember, you know, as you said, they created this entity called Dairy Farmers, which is doing the bulk of the raw milk, which is a low margin, high volume business. Mm-hmm. You know, I spent some time, you know, trying to understand it just from an operating perspective, and there wasn't really, you know, it's difficult to understand company results when there's this sort of deconsolidation taking place. But it seemed that the earnings growth actually came in from some other operating income item, not necessarily from the core business. Of course, from a revenue perspective, yeah. You know, some of their core lines, the fruit juices and stuff, the non-dairy stuff, if you can call it that, actually did very well. So it's interesting that they're diversifying their revenue base because you know, products derived from pure dairy are becoming increasingly commoditized now, and especially with the you know, with the competition coming in from the non-raw milk, so the UHT milk and stuff, it's hurt them in the past. So restructuring was necessary.
Very quickly, RB Platinum, its share price rising today despite reporting a loss following an 864 million rand impairment. What have you made of movement on that, and how are you feeling about a player like RB Plat?
Listen, I think when they listed, they had the Bafokeng Rathmines mine, and the idea was to spend 12 or 13 billion and develop the adjacent property, Staledrift. Not an easy time to do it. You know, they haven't had a good platinum price. They had a stronger rand, production issues, labor issues. All these things have confounded them in the last few years. And I think for a lot of the platinum players, we need to see a substantially higher platinum price, you know, before we see meaningful earnings growth.
Of course, it's seen higher restructuring costs come to the fore and, you know, act as somewhat of an impediment to its earnings as well. Do you see that paying off sooner rather than later?
It's always a gamble with these restructuring, you know. Ultimately, a mining company is dependent on the rand dollar weakening, mm-hmm. and you know, a stronger commodity price, and hopefully no production issues.
Yeah.
I think it might be too early to make a call one way or the
other. Okay, so too early on that. What's your stock pick at the moment?
I'm going to go for British American Tobacco. It's been slaughtered in the last 2 weeks, and I think it's largely because of this concern on valuation. You know, it's seen almost like a utility company, high dividend yield, stable earnings growth, but nothing spectacular. But I think the market's exaggerated the valuation theme, and the sell down in it is probably an opportunity for long term investors to buy.
So some bottom picking opportunity emerging there. Nesson, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for having joined us in studio this evening. Nesson Nayar is with Sasfin Securities. Welcome back. Well, Clover Industries has had a much improved first half following the realignment of its business and the unbundling of its milk unit to the farmers that supply it. Although that led to a sharp fall in revenue in the 6 months to December, normalized revenue was up 8% and headline earnings per share jumped 18%. Stephen caught up with the company's CEO, Johan Forster, and asked if the 8% revenue growth is a fair number to go on.
You must look at the normalized, so the like for like. So we just mainly split it out, the DFSA income, the turnover. So that is a real turnover growth.
Why did you unbundle DFSA now? And why, when you listed 8 years ago, did you keep it in the business? I mean, should you have changed the model before you listed?
8 years ago, the milk made up 80% of our business and beverages 20%, or beverages and related products. Today, the mix is completely different. 70% is milk and milk related. So what we've got now is a similar size business than when we listed, but no exposure to drinking milk. So it's drinking milk's got a very low margin. It's a very good business for retailers because they make continuous margin out of it, and very good business for farmers, but not good business for people in between.
Why wasn't it a good business for you in between there?
Because you're continuously squeezed in the middle between the retailers who take full margins, and you've got to look after the farmers to make sure that they, you know, that they make reasonable margins on the farm. So internationally, the farmer relationship is starting to go directly to the retailer and the farmer. And if you think about it, the retailers do have direct relationship with farmers in potatoes, tomatoes, all other sort of agricultural products, which they buy on a regular basis. So it made sense for us to unbundle DFSA so that the farmers can directly negotiate with the retailers, and that seems to be working for us. So we're now left with only value-added products, value-added dairy, juices, beverages, and other products that we're busy going into.
Does all that milk still come through Clover, though, for packaging and distribution, Johan?
Correct, yeah. So we still package it because it's under the Clover brand. They pay us a royalty. We package it and we still distribute it. So we're pretty much still in the service industry of dairy, but we just don't take the volume and the price risk. That's now all been moved to the farmers, where it should lie, actually. Mm.
And if you go back a year, you did have pricing pressures. A year ago, we had the droughts up in Gauteng and in the interior of the country. That's still continuing in the Western Cape, but that did put you under pressure last year.
Very much so, yes, yeah, because we had to increase the prices. We had too little milk plus the high milk prices. Our main milk source is the Eastern Cape and Natal, where fortunately we don't have a drought this year, but last year we were negatively affected. So we're not negatively affected by the drought in the Western Cape at this point in time.
Okay. Talk about the higher margin products you're getting into, and you are launching even more products, including olive oil and soya. Is Clover becoming more of a food producer rather than a dairy group?
I would say so, yes, yeah. So we are going to, but Clover is very well associated with a love brand, a mother brand, so it's probably going more towards healthy foods. And where the Clover brand and the distribution network can carry the products. So we wouldn't go into anything like alcoholic beverages or something. So it's something that's got to be very close to our core and very close to the personality of the brand. The olive oil that we produce is a very healthy olive oil. It's a product that people prefer over normal vegetable oil. The butter that we do, so all of those type of products. Soya gives an alternative for people who are lactose intolerant. So that's where Clover is moving to, into higher volume. And you can see the margin has improved from 6.3 to 8.8% already.
And would you expect that to continue improving as you bring on more of those products on board?
A combination of that, plus we've still got some plans to take out costs and realign the business. So we're halfway through that process. Although I must say the savings that we got in the first half is probably the 80% of the savings already. So, but there's another 20 or 30% left. So it's a combination of driving volumes. If you look at the success of the 6 months was to get 8% volumes through the system. And with a big base that we've got. So Clover has really repositioned itself very well. It's spent a lot of capital the last 12 years. This year we've released a lot of capital. If we can get the right volumes through the business, it will really do well.
You talked about efficiency improvements and also a pricing power for consumers. So how much of those efficiency improvements go into not putting your prices up higher, and how much do you then pocket?
So this particular year, we decided in the beginning of the year, after the last bad 6 months we had, that we're not going to put any prices through to the consumer. So we've managed to absorb over 300 million rands worth of inflationary costs, and we did not pass anything on to the consumer. And that led to 8% volume growth, which then in turn led to 18% HEPS growth. So this time around, we didn't take anything for ourselves. It came from the additional volumes.
So you're going to take for yourself in the second half?
Well, hopefully we can do something about that, yes.
How are you seeing the consumer at the moment? Because last year, and the consumer was very stretched. You did talk in the commentary today about November being particularly good with Black Friday for consumers, though December not so good due to weather patterns. Are you seeing a more resilient consumer out there?
I think the mood overall is much more positive after the ANC political conference. But the money is not in the system yet. It will only come, I believe, in July when the wages will go up 7% and inflation is down to 3.5%, 4%. And we saw the GDP growth this morning, 1.3%. So although there's a lot of optimism, I don't see it yet in the economy. But I think that we're all looking forward to a very good Easter for a very good March. So, I think we all depend on that. So January was very good for the retailers. February wasn't as good, hoping for a good March.
And the outlook for the second half, Johan?
Well, if unless something dramatically different changes, drought or anything like that, I think we're in a good position.
Well, that was Johan Forster, CEO of Clover. And that's where we leave things with you for this hour. After the break, though, it's Rafi Review. And I'm back at 7 o'clock. I'll be catching up with Gauteng's Finance MEC, Barbara Creasy, on the 2018-2019 budget, as well as First Rand CEO Johan Berger on the company's interim results out today. Also, just a note, don't forget to tune in tomorrow at midday to catch the live broadcast of MMI's interim results right here on Channel 412 Business Day TV. What's your stock pick at the moment?
I'm going to go for British American Tobacco. It's been slaughtered in the last 2 weeks. And I think it's largely because of this concern on valuation. You know, it's seen almost like a utility company, high dividend yield, stable earnings growth, but nothing spectacular. But I think the market's exaggerated the valuation theme. And the sell down in it is probably an opportunity for long-term investors to buy.
So some bottom-picking opportunity emerging there. Nesson, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for having joined us in studio
Thank
this
you.
Evening. Nesson Nair is with Sasfin Securities.